copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
The topic we're looking at is negotiation, and especially negotiation in the context of not just preserving relationships, but preferably building relationships, which can be a bit tricky. It's often hard for us to do that. My goal is, I have several today. One is, we're going to take a look at an example of negotiation in Daniel chapter 1. It's a really interesting story there, and we're going to spend some time working through it and I'm going to draw out some lessons that you may not have thought about previously. And then we're going to apply those lessons in a case study, just a little scenario that I've invented that's actually based on real life. And it's similar to a lot of the kinds of things that you and I probably get involved in on a day-to-day basis. And we're going to see if applying what we learned from Daniel helps us help this couple that's the topic of the case study. So that's the second objective today, is to work that through. And the final one is to leave you with an assignment so that when you get done, if you choose to actually try out some of these lessons in your own life in real situations, I have a little assignment that I'm going to work through right at the end that will help you learn how to do that. So that's where we're going to be going. One other thing, you probably have, or you may have, the notes for this workshop. I did them a couple months ago. In preparing the final PowerPoints over the weekend, I actually shifted things around just a bit. Didn't change the content of the notes, but I did move things around. So feel free to follow the PowerPoint. I imagine there's a way I can, share the PowerPoint with you. You can download it if you'd like to have it afterwards. But virtually everything I'm going to say, at least in outline form, is in the notes that you have for this workshop as well. So with that, here we go. First of all, negotiation is a discussion aimed at reaching agreement. Okay. I want to give this topic a very broad definition. Just think of negotiation as any discussion we have where we have the purpose of reaching an agreement. Okay. And we have these kinds of discussions all the time. We usually think of negotiation in big terms, for example, countries that are negotiating treaties, or political negotiations that take place between one group and another group, perhaps to decide on who our elected representative is going to be. But we also negotiate, we have discussions where we need to reach agreement in smaller things, questions that arise at church when we're trying to, for example, decide what should the youth group do this weekend? Where should we focus? Different people might have different ideas on that. Should we get new carpet or should we paint the sanctuary? And anytime we have to reach an agreement, we're going to think of it as a discussion that is actually a negotiation. It happens all the time in our families as well, where we have to work out with sometimes our children, most often with our spouses or parents, in-laws. How are we going to wind up doing this? And the idea is that if we can get more comfortable with dealing with negotiation and the small things of life, it'll be easier for us to begin to apply some of those lessons when we get to larger questions where there's more at stake. For many people, myself included, difficult negotiations are not very fun. They can be very competitive sometimes, with a lot of back and forth. People put pressure on each other to give in to what they want. Strong emotions sometimes can be generated, fear, anxiety, anger perhaps at the other person. And those kinds of emotions and the way they play out, how we talk to one another, can really strain relationships, so much so that we may just give in, say, okay, fine, have it your way. We may use words that are more gracious than that, but that's essentially the orientation of our heart. Or we might look for a quick compromise, simply say, well, let's meet halfway, just to get out of the situation because it's created a lot of discomfort. And here's the idea behind what we're going to do for the next hour. We can learn to negotiate differently. Sometimes we'll get stuck in that kind of negotiation and we just have to do the best we can. But there are some things that we can learn from Daniel that apply to any negotiation that you and I have today. And the interesting thing is that any negotiation from the smallest to the largest international problem, they're more alike than they are different. The dynamics that you see between countries are very similar in many ways to the dynamics that happen right within our own families. And so by looking at smaller things and looking at Daniel, hope for people to become more comfortable with all of this and to be able to look at negotiation in a little bit different light, perhaps, than you have in the past. So what we're going to do is we're going to read from Daniel. And this is from Daniel chapter 1, verses 8 to 16. You have it on the screen there. I'm just going to read it. Please read along with me. You can open your Bibles. I think I also put it in the notes. So beginning at verse 8, Daniel chapter 1. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Okay, it's the word of the Lord. So here's our first question. And when you have, if you have something you'd like to contribute, please unmute yourself and go ahead and tell me what you think. And remember, I'm not looking for right answers, so feel free to even try what seem to be sort of off-the-wall ideas. Why did Daniel's negotiation with his guard succeed when his negotiation with the chief official did not? First question. Why did it work when he approached his guard? And why didn't it work when he spoke with the chief official? What do you think? What was the problem that the chief official had? What kept him from saying yes to Daniel's request?
He was afraid of what the king could possibly do to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Afraid of the king. And he says, "I don't know if what you're proposing is actually going to work. And if you don't look as though you're well-nourished, it's my head," right? So there's a great deal of fear that's motivating the official at this point. I'm sorry, going and getting ahead of ourselves here. What about the chief official? Why did the chief official say yes? I'm sorry, the guard. Why did the guard say yes when the chief official said no? Because my life was at risk. What was in it for the guard? Why would he go along with Daniel's request? What was different about this second negotiation? Thoughts? What did Daniel propose?
It gave him a choice. He felt like he had a choice in it.
Okay. The guard had a choice. He was able to actually have some control, wasn't he, over the outcome. It was, give this a try. See what you think. You decide. So Daniel put the choice and the decision ultimately in the guard's hand. What Daniel had to do was to get the guard to say, yes, let's give this a test and see what happened. And Daniel seems to have been pretty confident that it was going to work out the way that he hoped it worked out. But we don't know that for sure. What else? What would be in it for the guard? Put yourself in the guard's shoes. Why would you say yes to Daniel? What would motivate you to do that?
If I may say, Guard was curious what would happen. Would the Daniel be able to achieve his proposal?
Yeah, absolutely. There could very well be a large element of curiosity in the guard as Daniel puts this proposal forward. Good. What else might be there? Remember, I'm not looking for right answers. We're just imagining what it's like to be the guard here confronted by Daniel.
There might be. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yes. There might be some benefits for the guard as well if he's achieving that.
What might a benefit be?
Well, honor, maybe better position.
Yeah. He might be thinking, boy, if this works and if these folks look better and the king notices it, or even the chief official whom I report to notices it, it's going to go well for me. I may get a promotion in this. Or at least if I mess up later on down the road, I'll have, I've done something well and that'll count toward my credit. Good. What else? Anything else you can think of?
The guard might also realize that extra food that he's not giving to the people under him, he might be able to take for himself.
Okay, so there might be more in it for the guard, right? In the way of food, drink, whatever it is. Anything else before we move on here?
Could we say that the guard would agree to Daniel's request because Daniel, quote unquote, gave the guard a choice. So treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So the guard can do whatever he likes, but in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. So the guard maintains control. There is a risk, right? Because the guard has to have these trainees looking well-nourished and healthy. But he's willing to take a risk. He can maintain control, so that minimizes the risk that he's taking. It may be that if it works out well, he looks good. He gets to serve his king well, and people take notice that, hey, this guy knows how to go about managing the people who are in training to go into royal service. And maybe he'll get a promotion. Maybe it will help him out later on. So there are all kinds of things. We don't know, because the text doesn't tell us what was motivating the guard. We don't know what was in his heart, why he said yes. All we know is that he did. But these are likely candidates that help explain why would the guard say yes when the chief official said no. So what you really have here as we examine this is it wasn't simply a matter of saying yes or no to Daniel's requests. Their underlying desires, their underlying motives that are operating here, that are actually at the root of how each person answers. The chief official says, can't do that. Why? Because he's fearful of the king. He's fearful of the king. And that means that if he's fearful of the king, the only way that he's going to say yes if Daniel can somehow allay that fear and help him see that saying yes to my request is not going to put you at risk. Didn't seem to be possible. With the guard, the situation has changed. The guard maybe has some desires to self-advance. It may be that he just likes Daniel and would like to give him a shot at seeing whether or not this works out. He can maintain control of it because he's in charge, and that helps minimize the risk. In the language of negotiation, these are what are called interests. And I want you just, that's one technical term I'm just going to throw out there. I'll try to avoid technical terms, but if you ever take a course in negotiation, or if you're reading something about the more technical aspects, they'll refer to interest. And all an interest is the underlying motive. It's the desire of the heart. It answers the question, why do I want what I want? Okay. What we see is that the chief official and the guard have answered with simple yeses and nos. What matters, though, is the underlying reasons, because we see that Daniel was able to get a yes out of the guard by beginning to focus on and find a way to be concerned about what mattered to his guard, where he wasn't able to do so with the chief official. So what were Daniel's interests? Why did he want to be excused? Because he didn't want to defile himself. He didn't want to eat the royal food, believing that it was contrary to God's will for him and the other Hebrew youths. He wanted to honor God, not defile himself with the food. And the text tells us that. What were the chief officials' interests? What motivated him to refuse? Right? Fear. Can't do it. Notice that in order to convince the chief official to agree to excuse him from the table, Daniel had to find a way to satisfy that concern, that underlying motive. Couldn't do it. With the guard, he changed his approach. He didn't just ask, he proposed a test. And that test allowed Daniel to accomplish a couple things. His interest hadn't changed. His desire was still to be excused from the royal table. But now he's finding a way to connect with his guard that identifies, it hooks into some of the guard's deeper desires. There can be a promotion in this for you. You're going to look good if this turns out well. You keep control. It's a minimal risk on your part to do all of these things. He created the discussion because they're trying to reach agreement here. So here's our definition of negotiation. He created a discussion which asked a different question. How can I satisfy the interests of my guard as well as my own? I want to stop here and just make sure that I'm explaining this adequately so far. What usually happens in negotiation is we say yes or no. We say, I want this, I'm not going to do that. And we tend to go back and forth. What we're doing here is we're trying to get beneath the surface and ask the question, why? What's at stake? And are there some ways that what's at stake for you, we can find a way to resolve this so that you get what's important to you and I also get at least some of what's important to me? Going beneath the surface, looking at the interests, helps us to accomplish this. So here's the key learning that we take from Daniel. To avoid negotiation deadlocks, change the discussion. Rather than focusing it on the position, the yes or the no, I want you to do this, I won't do this, which can result in a deadlock, in an impasse, we try to find out what's going on beneath the surface. What are the desires? Why is it that you're saying yes to that? What matters to you really? What's the deep concern here? Why are you saying no? What's really at stake? What matters for you? And you'll notice that as we do this, there's a great deal of concern expressed for what's important to others. It's not now just about me. It's not now just about what I want. It's about what the other person wants and how I can also, at the same time, serve and honor them where they have legitimate interests. And by legitimate, I just mean that they're not trying to do something that's illegal or immoral. Most of us have legitimate interests most of the time that we're trying to advance when we're in these kinds of conversations. Remember the note down at the bottom, for Christians, there are always three participants in any negotiation. There's me, there's the person I'm negotiating with, and there's also God. God is always part of our relationships. And when we negotiate with someone else, it's not just that we're trying to find a solution that benefits me. It's not only that I'm trying to find a solution that benefits both of us, but we're trying to do so in a way that really builds our, strengthens our relationship. This is a strong interest that God has. It's a strong priority for him because it's by the quality of our relationships, right, that people know that we're followers of Christ. So as we're going into this way of negotiating, what we're trying to do is to do so in a way that takes the priorities of God, what we know from the scripture, deeply into the way that we connect with other people by expressing concern for them, trying to find a way to love and serve them while not denying or overlooking those things that are of legitimate importance to ourselves as well. So I've used the term interests, and that just means what are the desires of our heart? What are our heart desires here? What did Daniel want to honor God? What did his guard want to be promoted, perhaps, to minimize risk. Maybe he liked Daniel. He knew that the chief official liked Daniel. Maybe he just wanted to see if there was a way to take care of Daniel. Maybe it was all of those and other things as well. The interests, the desires of our heart matter greatly. And so one of the first questions we ask anytime we're in a little bit of a difficult negotiation is, what is it that I'm desiring here? Why is it that I'm asking for what I'm asking for? And is it pleasing to God? Lots of times it is. Sometimes, though, it's not. And so we need to do a double check there, a double take there on ourselves, check up on what our motive is, what our desire is, and to see whether or not we can change that around. And the trick that Daniel, it's not a trick, the technique, the skill that Daniel practiced was he essentially asked, how can I serve the interests of my guard as well as myself? How can I find a way to appeal to him and help him change to a yes, where before the chief official was a no, okay, while also furthering the important interest that I have to honor the Lord by refusing to eat this royal food? Okay, that's the question that he asked. And we actually find this beautifully laid out in Philippians chapter 2. The whole context of chapter 2, verses 1 to 11 is really worth reading and thinking about, contemplating. We're not going to have time to do that. So I would just want to focus on two of the key passages here that summarize what we're getting at for our purposes. And this is at verses 3 and 4. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Now, the fascinating thing here to me is that in the last 30, 40 years or so, the secular realm of law practice and conflict resolution has developed this idea of what they call interest-based negotiation, which is where you help people look to what matters to one another and build on those common interests in order to find a solution. And we find way back when Paul wrote Philippians that this has been around for a long time, a couple thousand years or so, that this idea of mutual blessing has been part of our faith. And we look back even further and we see Daniel practicing it, okay, in this conversation that he had in chapter 1. Mutual blessing is a high priority, loving God, neighbor, and self. You see it all the time in the scriptures. It's part of the most important commandment in the second, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, self, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. But there it is. All three, God, myself, and other people, being part of the relational mix that we need to promote as much as we can. And what this way of thinking does is it allows us to get out of the either or, back and forth, my way or your way, and to ask a different question, not who wins, okay, but how can we meet one another's legitimate concerns? Are there some ways that we haven't thought of? There may not be, but oftentimes there are. Let me pause again just to see if there are any questions. Everybody tracking along here? We're going to practice this in a little case study in a bit. You're going to have a chance to try it out. Okay. So here's the case study that I want us to work through. It's real simple. And it's something that the kind of situation that actually happens every day, that comes up fairly frequently in our personal lives. So the case study is this. A couple found themselves in disagreement over whether to visit the wife's parents after church one Sunday. The wife thought it was a good idea. The husband did not, and they were at an impasse. Okay. See, a simple question here. Should we go to my parents or not? The wife says, yes, we need to go. We need to go to our parents, my parents' home. And the husband says, nope, not going to do it, not today. And that's all we know so far. And we have these kinds of conversations all the time where we have something that we have to decide. There's a lot of context, but depending on the relationship and depending on what's at stake, we often don't take the time to get beneath the surface. We often feel threatened that what I think is important, it's now being opposed. someone is blocking me from accomplishing what I know needs to be accomplished. And that emotion that's generated, the fear, anxiety, or aggression, I've got to win here, I've got to make sure that this happened. Those kinds of strong emotions can really generate difficult words, relationships can break down, attitudes of resentment or frustration or bitterness, whatever it might be, all too quickly build in. And maybe not right now. Maybe someone just says, sure, okay, we'll do what you want. But if it's not done with a heartfelt attitude that I want to serve you, okay, but instead is, okay, I'm saying yes, but in my heart, I'm really, really saying, I'm going to remember this. And next time I'm going to make sure that I get my way. Have to be very careful here. So here's what we have. This is the case study. There are many such ways a discussion like this might end. One spouse might just simply say, sure, okay, I can go visit my folks next week, next Sunday after church. Or sure, okay, we can go to my in-laws today after church. Not a problem. And oftentimes these sorts of small negotiations finish up exactly that way, with one person graciously agreeing to what the other person wants. But let's assume that they're not able to do this. Let's assume that there are other things at stake. And so they start going back and forth. And maybe the wife says, it's just really important that I visit my parents today, that we visit my parents today. I really want to go. And the husband says, I get it. I know you want to visit your parents, but it's not going to work for me today. It's just not something that I'm able to say yes to. And the point is that they each take a position on this. We're going to go to my parents. We're not going to go to my parents. And the more you tend to take a position, the more you tend to dig in your heels, because now you have a stake in looking right. You've said something, and backtracking from that can feel like you're just capitulating, giving in after having taken a stake and saying, no, that's not going to happen. And this is where things get tricky, where relationships can begin to be damaged, where relationships can break down. And that's what we want to try to avoid. So here's what we're going to do. They might ask questions of each other to begin to discover the deeper concerns and desires of their hearts. What interest does each person have? What is it that underlies this request of the wife? What is it that underlies this response of the husband? So the way we find more information is to ask questions. Okay. So let's imagine that you are the wife or you are the husband. What would be some questions, or you're just an impartial observer advising them? What would be some questions that would be good to ask to begin to find out more about what's really at stake here? What do you think? And this is a discussion question. Please open your mic. Remember, I'm not looking for right answers.
If I'll be the husband, I'll ask her, is there other time when we can go, because today I have a problem. I'm not able to go. I'm not sure. Feeling good. I'm busy. So just looking for another moment to fulfill her want.
Absolutely. That would be a question that would help begin to expand the conversation. Are there more solutions than just what you're proposing? Very good. What else? And I realize it's a little bit awkward having to answer here in front of folks. If we were in a live setting, you'd be in small groups talking about this. And then each small group would debrief. And that's not something we can do. And that was the reason for my ground rule at the outset. There's no wrong answer. Not looking for a right answer here. We just want to work on this together, see what we can come up with. So what are some other thoughts?
I think I would want to find out what is actually the reason why the husband doesn't want to go? Is it because he's busy and it's just that simple? Or is it because he knows that every time they go to her parents, they end up fighting or something else?
Yeah, very good.
I think that that reason, that that motive of why he doesn't want to go is really significant. But I also think that from the position of the wife, I think that that would be a very difficult question to ask in a way that's not offensive.
Well, that's good. What would you, can I push that just a little bit? And I'll just open this up to broader discussion. So is it Carly? Is that, have I got your name right? I'm not seeing everybody on the screen. So Carly, do you have any thoughts? What would be an offensive way to do that? And what would be an inoffensive? Just put yourself in the shoes of these folks. What would you find to be an offensive way? And what would be less offensive? Give you a shot first, and then we'll see what others think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the offensive way to do it is much easier to think of. I imagine the wife all red in the face and, well, why don't you want to go? You never want to go. What, I mean, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
That would be
more offensive. That would be, that has a little bit of attack and is a question, but the way that you phrased it in the tone of voice are really a matter of attacking, trying to get the other person to agree under the guise of asking a question that tries to show some sensitivity. And that's where the offense comes in. What if you just said something like, okay, you're not in, it doesn't work for you to go. What's going on this afternoon that, you know, after church that's important for you? I really like to understand and see if we can figure out a way to, you know, to make sure that what happens that's important to you, we can make sure that that happens. Mm. So you've asked it in a way that, first of all, it stresses, I want to hear you. I want to find a solution that works for you, that takes your concerns into account, but I need to know what you're looking at. So would you be willing to tell me what it is that is important for you to accomplish this afternoon? Now, you haven't said we're automatically going to do what you want to do. Just say, I'd really like to understand, see if we can find a way to, you know, to come up with a solution here that works for both of us. Something like that. Does that seem less offensive? I see Carly nodding her head. So that works a little bit better. And a lot has to do with the relational context, doesn't it? If this is a husband and wife that are used to working things out and ask these sorts of things all the time, it's different than if this is a husband and wife that typically winds up getting into a very heated argument at this point, in which case there could be some real reluctance to open up this conversation. So it's a matter of learning how to ask questions in a little bit less offensive way, and a little bit more open way, and especially stressing, I want to know what's important to you. How can I help accomplish that today? Okay. And hopefully that has a positive impact. Good. Any other thoughts on how to ask a less offensive question that elicits information?
Yeah, I just have a question.
Sure.
And I don't know if maybe you'll get to this, but let's say you're in this situation, you're arguing with your husband or your wife. What things can you do to try to diffuse yourself in order to even be able to ask the question in a civil way?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of this has to do with preparation. that it's not simply a matter of on the spot deciding that you want to respond differently. But that's why we're doing a workshop like this. So you begin to get some different ideas of how you can go about working through these sorts of questions, these sorts of discussions. You've thought ahead of time, how am I going to make sure the next time something like this comes up that I respond differently? What are my trigger points? What do I fear? Do I feel, you know, strong emotions of frustration or anxiety? And Lord, show me how I can deal with those more effectively when I actually get in the moment. A good way to do this is just look for opportunities in everyday life to practice. Say, this is a struggle for me. That's okay. It's just where I am right now. What can I do in order to be able to live out these conversations in a better way? What is it that I would like to have happen? Lord, can you teach me how to be more gracious with my tone of voice, to not feel that sense of anxiety, to maybe just take a deep breath before I speak, collect my thoughts and get some oxygen into my system, whatever it might be. I think it's really hard to do this in the moment if you haven't already been doing some practicing and have the idea that this is a different kind of response I want to go into here. Is that helpful? Okay, great. What are some other questions that you might want to ask? We have asking why, what's important for you, doing so in a way that is, or just statements that you might want to make, doing so in a way that's not offensive.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm in my car, so I don't really know, and I'm on my phone. So I don't know if you see me or can hear me. I hope you can hear me at least. I was actually wondering that the first thing is to actually even want to ask the question, because in the marital example that you are giving now, I would imagine that if the lack of willingness for the husband to go see the parents of the wife would result from like tension between the in-laws and the husband, the wife should know about that. And I think sometimes we just kind of, so she would already assume what is the reason why he doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to go because I don't know, she knows that her mother would nag him about something, or maybe she knows already that he doesn't want to go because every Sunday afternoon he just wants to play video games, let's say, or he wants to do something, you know.
Sure.
So I think even before framing the question in the right way, we should try to think about asking the question, because sometimes we presume that we know where the person is coming from. And I think it's as much valid in the example of a married couple as you're giving now, or when we are having negotiations or arguments or debates with, you know, on worldviews or sorry, in the work context, that sometimes we presume that we know why something or it's important, or what is the reason behind, mm-hmm. what is the yep. interest behind.
Yep. And it's really important that we spend the time, if not right then, eventually talking all of that through, because these are legitimate concerns. And as a married couple, we need to be working together to figure out how we overcome those concerns. It's not just one spouse's problem, but not the others. It's both of them. Let me just move on a little bit here. You get the idea that we're going to be trying to get more information, and we're going to assume it's a fairly simple relationship, not with a lot of backstory that creates tensions that would make this a more complex setting. So I'm going to give you some additional information here, and we'll just see what kind of a difference this makes and how we think about it. So husband had just returned. This is what the wife is finding out. She knows he just returned from a long trip the previous evening. He was tired, already decided that he wanted to go home after church, have a simple lunch, and spend the afternoon unwinding. He likes his in-laws, but they're gregarious and require a high degree of energy. Okay, they're going to really engage him. And right now, he does not feel energetic, and he needs some time to recharge. So what if he says this and reveals this to his wife? Look, here's where I am. What would you say are his interests? What are the desires of his heart? What is it that he wants to accomplish? Well, he wants to recharge. It's not that he doesn't like his in-laws. He just wants to be able to meet with them at a time and in a place where he's a little bit more ready to deal with the energy, to really put out the energy that he knows they're going to require. You see other interests in there, other desires of his heart? Is there anything wrong with that? Is that not a legitimate desire to be able to engage them well from a position of interest and concern rather than out of fatigue, which might make him less open to talking and interacting? Probably not. At least that's my take on it. So there are his interests. Additional information for the wife. Wife's not seen her parents in several weeks, feeling remiss in her responsibilities as a daughter. They're getting older. Her dad recently had some significant medical problems. She feels the uncertainty of not knowing what the future might bring, pressing in on her, and wants to be more diligent, staying in close touch with her mom and with her dad. So what are the wife's interests here? What is it that she wants to accomplish? Honor her parents, stay in touch, support them as they go through increasingly difficult times. So this little argument, or this little disagreement that this couple has had, on the surface, it's about, are they going to go to the wife's parents' house after church? That's where the discussion begins. But as you get beneath the surface, you find out there's a lot more here. The reason the wife wants to do that is because she's feeling uncertainty about her parents' future, especially her dad, who's developed some severe medical issues. Okay, with the husband, he's just not feeling he has the energy to be able to do this. Okay, he would like to be able to recharge first so that he can really engage well with his in-laws. It's not that he doesn't like them, it's that they require a high degree of energy. So what we're doing is we're actually using that Philippians 2 passage. We're coming up with a different approach for them to try to think about this. Rather than have it either or, either we go to the wife's parents after church or we don't, we go home. When you get locked in that kind of either or setting, it's really tough because that's when you start going back and forth and putting pressure on each other and get into an argument and who knows where that's going to lead. Different question that Philippians 2 poses, and it's what Daniel did basically. Are there ways that we can accomplish what's important to the wife, to be able to spend time with their parents, to support them, to show them that she loves them, to be physically present, while also accomplishing the interests of the husband? Okay. That is, that he really does have some time. Monday's a work day. He's got to be back to work tomorrow. He really would appreciate having some time to recharge, not have to engage. That's what's at stake. That's why these people are taking the positions that they are. We go to my parents. We don't go to your parents. This is what it's really all about. So the idea here is that there may be some ways, just as Daniel found a way to be able to serve his interests and those of his guard, there may be some ways that the husband and wife can serve each other's interests under these circumstances so that both of them come away feeling as though they've been listened to, respected, and they've worked together. They've actually built a stronger relationship in the process of having this discussion and reaching an agreement. And when this happens, these are often referred to as win-win solutions. And you may have heard that term. Win-win negotiation has been a big deal. It's a big deal in the secular world, but this is where it actually started a long time ago in Philippians and before that, that in Daniel's time, being concerned for the interests of others as well as our own interests. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do, and I'm sorry we can't break into small groups to do this, but I would like you to identify two possible solutions to this question. Remember, I'm not looking for right answers. How can the wife love, support, be present with her parents while the husband has some space that he would like to have in order to recharge? That's the question. And notice that it's something in which they both have a stake. They work on this together. And then you'll note in your notes, you'll see that I call this a joint problem statement. It's no longer either or, but because both of the concerns are built into this question, it's something that they can work on together. How can we satisfy your concerns? Well, at the same time, we satisfy my concerns. It's worth considering. There may not be a solution, but if they don't look at it, they won't know. So I'm going to let you just have a couple of minutes. Write down some thoughts, please. What are two possible ways that this question, this new Philippians 2 formulated question, might be resolved? The wife's interest, the husband's interest. What might be a solution that would take both those into account? And I'm just going to be quiet here for a couple of minutes, give you a chance to think about it, and then I'm going to ask you to share any ideas that you have. Okay. What are some thoughts? And please remember, I'm not looking for right answers. The idea is to start being a little creative and get out of this either-or mindset. So what are some ideas that you have?
Could a good idea be to perhaps have the wife call the parents to schedule a dinner or schedule a meeting in the next day And during this conversation, she could ask also how they are feeling, and perhaps in a subtle or more another way, to more seen way, she can address some issues that she's, some concerns that she's having.
Yeah, great, absolutely. There's one possible solution that they can consider that gets them out of this bind that they're currently arguing back and forth over. Good. What else? What are some other ways?
Well, they could tie. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I would just split. And when I'm a wife, I would just go alone to my parents and let my husband rest at home.
Okay. There's another solution. They don't have to go together. The wife can go by herself and the husband can go home. Absolutely. Good. What else? Andrew, I think you were going to say something.
Yeah, I mean, they could time limit the visit to a shorter time, or, for example, the husband could be released from being with his in-laws. He might go to a couch and have a nap during the time.
Good. He might very well. Very good. What else? Any other possible solutions here?
They could do like sort of a reverse of what someone else said, where they could say, rest now in the afternoon, have a quiet lunch, just have some downtime, and then maybe go later in the evening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So here in about 5-6 minutes, we've come up with four possibilities. The point is, and I think you're getting it, is that when you get in this kind of discussion, we become, we only see two possibilities, either what I want or what you want. And this causes us to really limit our ability to honor one another, to respect what's important to one another, which of course is at the heart of God's concern. You know, down at the bottom, say, what interests might be hard for Christian negotiators to remember? And I find, for me at least, that it's always hard for me to remember God's concerns, his priorities, or that we build our relationships. Whether or not we go to my in-laws, at least in my view, in terms of how God might look at this, isn't nearly as important as how do we go about answering that question. Do we do so in a way that respects one another, that builds on the marriage vows that we made to love, honor, cherish, obey one another? Or does it do something different than that? Does it begin to build walls between myself and my spouse? Does it allow anger and resentment to begin to fester? And a lot of troubled marriages develop trouble over a longer period of time. It's usually not the big blow up, although that happens sometimes. It's usually little conversations like this, little discussions that are not managed well, and little hurts, little wounds, little resentments that are held in and kept. And over time, it's like a cracked piece of pottery that you put in hot water. You didn't know it was cracked. All of a sudden, it breaks. And it didn't happen just then. Hey, that crack has been developing over years and years. And that's oftentimes how marriages wind up failing. And then it's really hard to put the pieces back together. So the idea is, if you find yourself, if I find myself in this back and forth, either or bind, what if there's a way to find out what's at stake, what's really important, and begin to think creatively, just as you all have done here? That is the Philippians 2 approach. And that is an option. That's something that's available to each and every one of us every time we get in one of these tricky discussions where we have to reach an agreement and we don't seem to be getting where we would like to get to. Let me just stop and see if there are any questions before we wrap this up. Good going. Those are good solutions. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, I just wanted to ask the case study was on an equal basis. It was between husband and wife. How should we negotiate if the relationship is not like between husband and wife, but is between, for example, a superior and an inferior in the business context or in a Christian organization context, and the superior tells you will do it like this Why? Because I'm telling you so.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one, isn't it? There's so much, and I don't mean to dodge the question here, but there's so much that is contextual there. That is to say, it depends on the specific relationship, on whatever what is being ordered. We have an example of that in Daniel. His guard is in a higher position of authority. The guard can order Daniel what to do. And what we see Daniel do is very respectfully and thoughtfully ask if the guard would be open to basically to discussing this and to looking at a different solution. Now, the guard might have said no, in which case Daniel would have had to make a decision regarding what comes next. We don't know what that would have looked like. But in general, anytime we're in a situation where we're having to appeal to someone who is in a position of authority, who maybe seems closed, to find a way to say, could we consider this, or would you be open to this kind of my doing it in this way, and here's why I think that would be better. Now, it may be that the relationship just doesn't allow that kind of conversation, in which case you'll need to decide, what do I do under these circumstances? And the corollary then is, how do I begin to build a better relationship with this person where they might be more open to having a conversation in which they'll hear what I have to say? May not be possible. Sometimes it's not. But too often I find that we tend to dismiss the possibility out of hand. Sometimes a person in authority is acting primarily out of fear, that they're afraid if they listen, they'll look weak. And if they look weak, people will walk all over them and their career, their position will be at stake. If that's the case, and I think that's often a pretty good working hypothesis, then the question is, how can I approach them without making them look weak? How can I acknowledge their authority? How can I acknowledge that they have the position and I am underneath them? How can I acknowledge that at the same time that I show, I want to help you out. I want to figure out a better way to do this. If you want to hear it, great. If you don't, okay, then we'll do it the way you want. I suppose you always have the option of resigning and simply saying, that's it. This isn't going to work for me anymore. But does that help answer your question, Rania?
Yes.
Okay, it's a great question. It comes up all the time. Don't assume that what you hear is all the story. In my experience, oftentimes, more often than you think, people that are stubborn like that are stubborn out of fear because they're afraid of something that will happen if they appear more open. And so knowing that, we can ask God to show us, if not this time, maybe next time, how we can help allay that fear and help this person see we're on your side. Okay, ending up here, The Peacemaker by Ken Sandy is a great resource for resolving differences, especially relational differences and reconciling. Chapter 11 of that book deals with this kind of negotiation. Ken calls it the pause principle, and this is based on five different steps that we can take when we're in a negotiation. And we've actually talked about almost all of these. The first is to prepare, to pray, to identify priorities and interests, my own and the other person, research the topic if it's something where it would help for me to know, have more information about this. Now, this assumes it's not something spontaneous, spur of the moment, but I'm actually going to sit down and have a discussion that I can do some preparing for. For husband and wife, the best way to prepare is to develop an open, caring relationship over time so that when you reach these awkward conversations, you're in a position not of having to look strong or having to protect yourself, but of being used to working with this person and trying to find a way to do what's best for them, even as they look to find a way to help you accomplish what's best for you. So preparation, affirming the relationship, the two big ways that I've found this is helpful. It's not just thinking good thoughts about someone. Listen thoughtfully to what they have to say. Listen carefully. Okay, show them the same kind of respect that you would like them to show you when you speak. Ask respectful questions. Don't do so in a way that puts them on the defensive or that really is a statement in the guise of a question. The classic one is where you basically, well, look, don't you think that what I'm proposing is really the best way? that's a question, but it's really a statement of your intent and trying to get them to come along to your side. Ask respectful questions that show you're concerned about them, that demonstrate the same kind of concern that the Lord shows us. Understand interests. We've been all through that. That's Philippians 2, search for creative solutions. Building, if possible, on the interests of all, evaluate objectively. Choose the best solution. Okay? If a solution doesn't work, well, find out why. Okay, this solution that we're proposing looks pretty good to me. You're not interested in it. What would you like to change in this possible solution? What change would make it workable for you? Okay, and let them begin to say, well, it doesn't work. Here's what we need to change. How about if we do this instead? The idea is to get to a point where as much as possible, the concerns that everyone has are being met and see if it'll work. Works a lot more than you might think, but it takes more practice than you might think as well. And so that leads us to the last part here, an assignment. There's a fairly long assignment in your notes. I tried to shorten it and make it more doable. First of all, identify your natural negotiation style. Do you compete, avoid, or compromise? Anytime you're in this kind of discussion where you have to reach an agreement, is your natural response to compete, to try to win to your point of view? And this especially happens when we get in this back and forth, either or, where we put pressure in one way or another on the other person to agree with what we want. Do we avoid? That is, we're so uncomfortable with this, we just try to put it off, or we quickly say, okay, have your way. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that if it's done with an empathetic heart that really wants to serve the Lord and serve the other person. But if it's done out of resentment and frustration, all we're doing is building up the bad kind of relational memory that will make things worse off down the road. Some people quickly look for a compromise. Okay, how about, you know, if I meet you halfway, okay, we'll split this. And that can be a really wise thing to do, especially when time is short. Each of us has a natural style that we tend to pursue. So just be aware of it. It's where you are, and there's nothing wrong with it. There's not one thing better, and that's not that one is better than the other. Each of them has strengths and each of them has weaknesses. So become aware of what your natural style is. Second, at least once each day when you're having a conversation where you have to find an agreement, try to see what the interests are. See if you can identify what your interests are, what the interests are of the other person. Okay? Just do a little bit of practicing there so that you get in the habit of not just listening to what they say, but saying, huh, that's really interesting. Can you tell me more? I'd like to know more about why you feel the way that you do. That kind of question, relatively non-threatening. Okay, if it's genuine, it shows a lot of interest and concern for the other person. And you begin to get a sense of how to ask good questions using your style, your wording, your personality that begin to help other people open up. But also be aware of what's at stake for you. Make sure that you know what your interests are. When you're finally ready, give it a try. Okay? And like any new skill, this requires practice. So the book, The Peacemaker, our website, Relational Wisdom 360, rw360.org, or my email address, I think, is in your notes, chip@rw360.org. I'd be glad to be in touch with you personally. And that brings us to the close. So thank you very much. Let me just close with some prayer here. And I wish you all a great ELF conference. Father, thank you for the time we've had. Thank you for the great answers and insights that you have provided to each of us. We ask your blessing on all of us as we go forward and have discussions, large and small, where we need to reach agreement to do so in a way that brings honor and glory to you. We pray all this in Christ's name. Amen.